Minnesota, giant in the wooded earth. How distant now the drowsy sleep of geologic ages. Red eruptive lavas flow. The shifting urge of ice. The rock to pebbled sand. How dim the slow hurt of biologic growing pains. The annelid and tribolite, the toothed saber in the jaw, and in the spill of time, almost forgot, the chippers of the shining quartz, the lithic men of Little Falls, the upstream movers, people of the mound, the ancient fathers of Dakota and Ojibwa. Deerhide tread on immemorial routes. Minnesota, giant ribboned with the silver rush of waters, bring to mind the first white foot upon this red man's soil, the pale-cheeked harbinger of Europe's flood, an alien smile among the Indian corn. Recall the hairy itch of voyageur, of trader on the river's edge, the shining peltries, gold that ran on padded feet, dead, shouldered high at palisaded post and fortress, ermine for a monarch's paramour. Remember, listen now, where paddles hardly whispered in the wooded hush of lakes, the quiet shattered, sidewheelers, splashy chug, canoe that belches fire, steamboats tootling up the river bends, nosing waters mingled of St. Peter's River and the Mississippi, loaded, hardtack, salt pork, soldiers' rations at Fort Snelling, one piano for Mendota, Henry Sibley's village house, demijohns of whiskey for old Pig's Eye. Silver chalice for the chapel. Settlers. Settlers in a trickle, swelling to a tide. The broad axe and the whipsaw noisy with the hammers knock on wood. The clearings loud with timbers crashing fall. Arising on the morrow, warm with cabin berth, with clabbered house and mercantile emporium, until at scattered roadways, intersections, village laughter rose and mingled with the red man's consul smoke, and village plank walks lay upon the Indian's feasting place. The plow turned black the prairie hunting home. The red man nudged and shouldered westward, ever westward, glowered. Now, recall the swell of hungry settlers. Village pride become a city. Mississippi landing places shouting to be heard. Winona, Wabasha, Reeds, St. Paul's, where Galtier's chapel cross was high upon the cliff. The whiskey cabin of old Pig's Eye shadow hung below. St. Anthony's with sawmills whining. Minneapolis with flower dust of grist arising. Pride of village growth become the city's boasting cry. Let us be recognized. Our name ring in the halls of Washington. The buckskin Sibley, clad in dignity of frock coat, speaking. Those who sent me here, who labor with the axe, the anvil, and the plow, have now no advocate upon the floor of Congress. He led the delegates' way to recognition. The crowd that April day on St. Paul's levee front received the tidings, shouted, one thin voice arising, thank God we live in the United States again. Remember then, with Sibley's voice, the territorial clamor, statehood, machination cloaked in hoodwink politics, enabling act, convention. Joe Rolette with the capital in his pocket. Election, at last, admission. May Day frenzy rode the streets of Minneapolis, whipped the byways of St. Paul. Bring out the big gun, Minnesota now, a state, star of the North. Minnesota, giant at the midriff of the century past. Remember these and ponder. Miles of timber felled, the fenced-in prairie acres. Oxcart trails dividing, twig and branch-like outward from the towns. Emigration surges, fretting at the red man's land. Like distant thunder, rumblings from the Indian teepees. Recall Traverse des Sioux, the treaty of the bread and wine, the tricky ink of traders' promises. Beneath the wavering crosses made, forever gone the land of buffalo and elk, the prairie home of immemorial meat and drink, the rush of settlers on the Indian lands, boomtown mushrooms upthrust in a night, the locust flood that westward washed, the shanty claim, the soddy paisley shawl flung over new-cut stump. Upon the store-box tabletop, the dainty teacups, fragile as a breath, beside the red man's beaded sleeve. The wagon trails roll on, and in their wake, the trampled prairie rose. The long grass flattened. Remember these and ponder. Red man, grief tight. The best Indian is a dead Indian. The buffalo leg bone bleaching at the furrow's end. The teepee starving. Winter's bony fingers sharpening the scalping knife. The wolf howl lifted on the dancing ground. Kill! New Ulam and the sheeted flame. Birch Cooley's rout. The charred doorway. Pallid dawn on the family Bible. And Harper's magazine, a Springfield rifle broken, a Dakota tomahawk fallen. As in a troubled dream, remember Northern brother, Southern brother locked in clash. Bull Run, Missionary Ridge, the first Minnesota at Gettysburg, and the sickle of death's red harvest, the sad-eyed Negro. Terror healed in the underground. Minnesota, giant now in the midriff of the present time. Look and remember, where outpost lonely trader whistled in his dog, the streets of cities bustle. Oxcart trails, now shod with steel and concrete, weave the tapestry of transport, binding corner of the state to corner, rolling wheels to bear the life stuff of the state, as once they bore the wheat, the ore, the wood, bonanza wheat, Red River Valley's gold in sheaves, to raise the wall of gristing stone and roller, Minneapolis pride, the pine-concealed vermilion ore, Mesabi, giant in the iron ridges gouged and gutted, valleys at a time. The timbered log, how short a time the hills of steepled spruce remained. The axes came in armies, rivers choked with pine. Paul Bunyan rode the log raft to the snarling saw. The future rolls on rubber. Lo, the cities piling to the sky. Minneapolis, Doric column rising from Dakota music. City vibrant with the quick step of vitality. Picasso, neighbor to the dollar sign. St. Paul, where history's pageant broods on Sibley Street, a sense of crinoline and nylon sheer. Duluth, St. Cloud, Mankato, Crookston, a baker's hundred more. Minnesota, giant of tomorrow's century, behold the task. Let pity mark their memory, the faithful dead from Verdun to the Bulge, from Iwo Jima to Pusan. Knit up the wounds of brotherhood and pray for plowshares from the nuclear blast. From Main Street's weathered stones raise up the city of the intellect, where Plato and the highest faith beside the test tube stand. Behold how Earth's aurora fades. The dawn now burns on the moon's far edge. Today is poised for orbit. Tomorrow's reach galactic. Go, strider of the satellite age. Twirl lariats of rocket flame. And through the lunar dark, hurl shining ropes to loop the utmost coruscating star.
As the future and the promise of a state lies in the people of that state, so can the strength and accomplishment of a state be measured in the strength and accomplishment of the people of that state. Turning first to the field of science, Dr. Berkner organized the Research and Development Board of the Department of Defense and his organization of the National Research Council. Government study led to the Berkner Report entitled Science and Foreign Relations. He is president of Associated Universities Incorporated, which provides access to research for 9 Eastern universities. He is vice president of the Special Committee of the International Geophysical Year and a member of the President's Science Advisory Committee and chairman of the Committee on Meteorology and member of the Foreign Science Policy Committee of the National Academy of Science. It is my pleasure to present to you this distinguished Minnesotan, Dr. L.V. Berkner.
A great English scientist of the last generation once commented that science flourished best in a prosperous environment. Likewise, we may equally remark that people prosper best in an atmosphere of fruitful scientific progress. Certainly, this interaction of science and technology with prosperity has been clearly evident during Minnesota's first century. For science and engineering have been vital foundations to Minnesota's great primary industries of agriculture, mining, lumbering, and manufacturing. The great foresight of Minnesota's pioneers in founding and liberally supporting its great university has given the state a focus for its scientific activity. Its presence has stimulated the men and women of Minnesota to join in the pursuit of the extension of knowledge. I recall as a youngster the thrill of visiting the laboratories of the University of Minnesota's Engineering College and learning of the opportunities that then the new science of radio had to offer, opportunities that I and my colleagues were later to enjoy because of this university. This vision of intellectual opportunity, supported through the wisdom of Minnesota's citizens, has shaped the lives of its young men and young women and has brought honor and prosperity to the state. Minnesota will look with ever more emphasis to science and technology to develop its future. The reaction of new knowledge on agriculture will increase farm incomes and food supplies to meet the demands of America's growing population. Science will expand the vast resources of a state with magnificent potentials of minerals below its surface and with unbounded supplies of good land and water and sunshine above. Science and technology are the foundations for untold new industry that will extend Minnesota's great productive potential everywhere for the benefit of men. But above all, science will play its major role as a part of the learning and the scholarship that Minnesotans have always admired in creating those attitudes of mind and of spirit that make life worth living in this wonderful land. Mr. Governor, may I, as President of the International Council of Scientific Union, present to you the very best wishes of scientists of all lands for the success of the state of Minnesota in its second century, and may I add, if I can be so presumptuous, that we have worked very hard to erect the first satellites in the celebration of your centennial.
Science has been the life of our next guest, and rich indeed have been the accomplishments of this Minnesotan. Paul E. Klopstegg was born in Henderson, Minnesota, was educated here, and received his doctorate from the University of Minnesota in 1916. He is the National Research Council's chairman on artificial limbs, and in 1949 and 1950 was chairman of the Board of Governors of the Argonne National Laboratory. The latest honor to come to this great Minnesotan is his election to president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the world's largest organization of scientists. I am indeed proud to present this famous Minnesotan, Dr. Paul E. Klopstegg.
This unique celebration is an occasion when I hope that a small bit of sentiment may be in order. My departure from Minnesota as a resident goes back many years, but the ties to my native state have always remained strong. My birthplace, as the governor indicated, is some 50 miles up the beautiful valley of the Minnesota River. There I spent the years of my youth attending public schools and completing high school. There too I roamed the wooded hillsides, I fished the river and the lakes, swam and engaged in other activities, both work and play, that were normal to the times. Those memories are among my permanent and indestructible assets. There is no doubt in my mind about the profound influence of the environment of those years, namely a good home and fine parents and the associations in the community where I grew to manhood. To me, Minnesota has always been clearly typified by the homely virtues of the citizens I knew so well. They were not blessed with wealth, but were rich in the enjoyment of friendships that stood the test of the Golden Rule. They were earnest, hardworking, God-fearing craftsmen, farmers, and professional people. All of them competently and responsibly looked after their families and themselves. They highly valued education. The greatness that characterizes Minnesota today is, I am sure, the normal consequence of the virtues of her sturdy citizens of 60, 80, and 100 years ago, many of them native of the Scandinavian countries of Germany and the other European countries represented here at this celebration. Among their virtues, I single out their industry and their devotion to education, which resulted in establishing their state university, one of the greatest and best in the nation, 7 years before they achieved statehood. I salute my alma mater, the University of Minnesota, and all her presidents. I am privileged to have met them all, from William Watts Falwell to Lou Morrill. and I am more than happy to enjoy the closer acquaintance of President Morrill, whose outstanding leadership of the university has contributed so much to its present eminence. I truly believe that the greatness of the state continues to be closely related to the unshakable belief of her citizens in education, to their initiative, and their continuing adherence to the homely virtues which I have mentioned. A great future for a great state is assured in agriculture, in medicine, in industry, in commerce, in education. Its wealth of fine citizenship is one guarantee. Its irresistible, boundless, natural beauty is another. Its natural resources are a third. Taking all things together, we can't miss. It is my good fortune and my pride to be one of her native sons.
Our next distinguished Minnesotan was born and educated in Fairmont. In 1932, Mr. Shanks joined the Prudential Insurance Company of America as assistant solicitor in charge of railroad reorganization for the bond department, and later became vice president and general solicitor of that organization. In 1944, he became its executive vice president and was elected a director of the organization in 1945. On January 1st, 1946, he became the president of the Prudential Insurance Company of America. He is trustee of several colleges and a director of numerous corporations. It is a great pleasure to present to you this distinguished Minnesota son, Mr. Carroll M. Shanks.
After a Minnesota boyhood, I have lived on the West Coast, on the East Coast, and in between. But I've always watched the fortunes of my home state. I have asked myself many times the question that many people are asking today. Minnesota has always been a fine place to make a home, to rear children, to enjoy life. In short, a good state. But where is Minnesota going? What will be her future? Minnesota has many agricultural, mining, industrial, transportation, and vacation time assets, and potential assets. So many that her future might seem assured. But there are a few economic disadvantages when we compare Minnesota to some of the older, more intensively developed, and more centrally located states. These assets and soft spots are only the starting point. The real key is not what you have, but what you do with them. Minnesota has plenty of water, which is an asset of immeasurable importance. Industrialization in the state is mounting, and by and large, it is the right kind of diversified industrialization. Your tourist trade is growing. Agriculture is moving to a new, more profitable basis. New processes are bringing wider horizons to mining. Population is increasing. Along with the development of these assets will come some problems. Increasing industrialization will bring population difficulties, and perhaps some of the kind of social problems found in the industrialized areas of the East, unless you are prepared ahead of time and carefully select your industries and their locations even more carefully than in the past. If you attract the best kind of industries, you will need also to attract an increasing number of well-educated, highly trained, and skilled people to man them. New construction and new industrial development will add to your income-producing assets, but if not carefully planned, could ruin the rewarding scenic wonders of one of the most attractive states. The changeover to new farming practices, profitable as they are in general, will continue to cause some temporary dislocations. Minnesota's assets are important, but not so striking that they will guarantee prosperity without good management. Her problems are not sufficiently important, on the other hand, to create serious hazards. As so often is the case, Minnesota's future in the long run will be determined by her leadership and the character of her people more than by any other factor or combination of factors. In this, Minnesota is fortunate. One of the chief accomplishments of the past 100 years we are celebrating was the development of the character of Minnesota's people. Their independence and determination are important building blocks for the future. The next 100 years are important ones, but the next 10 years are the most important of all. Those 10 years will set the pattern for Minnesota's entire future.
Our next honored Minnesotan and American has distinguished himself in many high military posts throughout the world. Loris Norstedt was born in Minneapolis, raised in Red Wing, where he received his primary education. He graduated from the United States Military Academy and was assigned to the 18th Pursuit Group in Hawaii, where he assumed his first command in 1933. During the following war years, he served in England, North Africa, and Italy. On November 20th, 1956, General Norstedt brought new honor to his country when the President appointed him to become Supreme Allied Commander of Europe and Commander-in-Chief, U.S. European Command. I'm happy and proud to present to you this distinguished Minnesotan, General Loris Norstedt.
I was asked the question of what Minnesota means to me. From Minnesota, I have taken many cherished things. I have taken memories of a happy boyhood in which guns and fishing rods and dogs and boats were important enough to leave me with an enduring love of rivers and lakes, of our fields and our forests. Recollections of my father's house, where the reverence of God and the meaning of life and duty were as one with a schoolboy's lessons, and of a kindly people, not long removed for the most part from their connection with other countries, but who spoke for an American view that was as authentic as the land from which they drew their living. Like many of you, my forebears of my grandparents' generation were Scandinavians. My life and education began here among people who were simple, strong, and good. People to whom the idea that nations can be brothers was not an abstraction, but a fact rooted in their own personal experience and emphasized by the short step they had taken to the farms and villages of Minnesota from the cottages in Norway, in Sweden, in Germany, and elsewhere in Europe. I believe that this background, this intermingling of two heritages, the European and the American, has made me more useful, or at any rate, more understanding in my present responsibility. Working as an American with Europeans in the common defense, I have no sense of being among strangers. And this is as it should be. And the thought that I wish to leave is a simple one. It is that the perils of the age in which we live have brought about a fresh drawing together, that nothing is more important to the survival of our common civilization in peace and prosperity than that the United States and Europe should understand each other. And in furthering that understanding, we from Minnesota, with our heritage, have a mighty obligation. Again, I have been asked what Minnesota means to me. Other than what I have said, I suppose that Minnesota means to me what it does to all of you. Everything that we think of, everything that we cherish when we think of home.